The following podcast was created to help 100 Women in Finance members learn more about us, our programs and priorities, and especially our people. In this series, we introduce you to our Global Association board members, the people who steer the organization through sound governance and financial management and ensure that we advance our mission. We hope that you enjoy the podcast, and we welcome your feedback at media@100women.org.
Hello everyone, I'm Amanda Pullinger, CEO of 100 Women in Finance. In this next installment of our Meet the Board Member podcast series, I'm delighted to introduce you to the board's Vice Chair, Elaine Crocker. Elaine is well known in the investment world. As president of More Capital Management, Elaine runs one of the world's best known investment management firms, overseeing all aspects of business operations on three continents. Elaine began her career in the investment world in the early 70s in Princeton, New Jersey at Commodities Corp, where she worked with trading legends Bruce Kovner and Paul Tudor Jones. And it was there that she met Lewis Bacon, with whom she has worked for more than two decades at More Capital. Elaine has helped shape hedge fund history from her position at the front lines of innovation, regulation, industry struggle and success, and global expansion. So 100 Women members really are so lucky to have someone with the depth of Elaine's experience and wisdom to serve on our board. So welcome to the podcast, Elaine. So how are you surviving in this strange new world?
Well, first of all, Amanda, thank you so much, and thank you for that very kind introduction. I find as I age, people think of me more and more as an icon, which is another word for a very old person. but that said, I'll always be young at heart, or so I think. We certainly find ourselves in unusual and frankly surprising times. Who would have thought as we rang in the new year we would be facing a pandemic which touched so many of us, has had such an impact, such long duration, at least by my standards, and global. But even in these difficult times, I really do have hope. I'm sequestering with my family. This is probably the most time I've spent with my husband in our entire married life, which is 30 some odd years, and my daughter and her husband and four children. And as I see these children adapt to what we're calling the new normal, hopefully not, it won't be, with such flexibility and grace, it just gives me even more hope for the generations coming up. And of course, I must say, even for the seven-year-old in this remote learning, their expertise in technology hits home. It certainly is far better than mine. But Amanda, I also think that all of us in this financial community will get a chance, an opportunity in helping to get our economy back on its feet.
Yeah, I share your enthusiasm. I think there are a good number of opportunities out of this period of time. And I think we are very fortunate to be in the finance industry. I think there are many other sectors who are going to have a much harder time coming out of this in any kind of decent shape. So I think we're really fortunate. So, well, thank you. Thank you for sharing a few pieces of your own kind of personal world in this, as I call it, the strange new world that we're in. So this is a bit unconventional, but if you're willing, I'd like to begin our chat by talking about another famous figure, Bruce Springsteen. So bear with me. You and he are contemporaries from the same general area in New Jersey, essentially from a shared time, culture, and context. His life narrative is well documented through his art, and his career is seen by most, including himself, to be a reaction to and a reflection of the career of the era and the place and prevailing value system in which he was raised. You've obviously had your own rarefied success in our industry, so I'm wondering what attribution for your personal resilience and achievement you might assign to having spent your formative years in Asbury Park, New Jersey in the 1960s?
So what I will say, amusing question for sure, and you're absolutely right. I certainly don't know and have never met, I won't say I never met Bruce Springsteen. He once was on an airplane that I was on. That's about it. Long, long ago. But we were born in the same hospital in Long Branch, New Jersey. I believe he was from Little Silver. I'm from the Long Branch area. And we certainly grew up on the Jersey Shore. In very much middle-class communities with very strong work ethics. And what I will say is, while it was a wonderful time, can you imagine beaches, the surf, Asbury Park was at that time at a real heyday. We had a convention hall that anyone who was anybody in Motown performed, and prices were quite affordable. And then, of course, there was Springsteen and the Stone Pony, which he's made famous. And I understand I haven't been back in a while. The Stone Pony still exists. But I know that the couple of times I've been later on in life, there's always a whisper that Springsteen will come back and perform that night. Hasn't happened that I know of, but there's always that whisper. But as wonderful as that childhood was, and actually growing up with a huge community of people with strong work ethics, you know, there was also a fair amount of independence. I'm not sure why we had so much independence. I'll say that perhaps it was a safer time. Lord knows what our parents were doing, so it isn't just me. It was actually all of us. But in fact, we had the ability to go to school, we did our homework, we weren't particularly told to do it. If in fact we had activities, we found our way there, maybe we walked, maybe we rode a bike, maybe we took a bus. I don't remember a lot of parents ferrying us back and forth, but I do remember that we did have independence. And as I reflect, that independence can in fact give you a great deal of confidence, but it also, I think for me, showed that I think it's where I developed a bit of a management style. I saw the results of independence. I saw that some people thrived with very little structure. Some struggled and they required more structure. And there were people who actually got lost. And if you didn't get them back on track with a bit more, they really got lost. And I think in management, that often happens with the people we work with or teams that we put together. But as wonderful as growing up in the Shore area of New Jersey was, it was also a time of social unrest, a time of really great prejudice, and it often hit close to home. People who you knew, you loved, they really did have some deep prejudices. And I think, again, you can hear about some of that in Springsteen's works, for sure. I think he faced the same thing. But I think what it gave me is a feeling for wanting to be fair, for giving opportunities to be able to share a bit. And I think that's stood me in good stead in my entire career. I still remember kind of early on in the successful portion of my career. I'll define that where I really did have an absolutely fabulous job. And that fabulous job was basically finding portfolio managers and people to support portfolio managers. And I would go to these large conferences. I know people, that sounds like a thing of the past with all of our social distancing, but I would walk into a room, I knew no one. And I'm not the most outgoing person in the world. I'm a quiet person. And quite frankly, it was frightening. So I did the walking around in a circle trying to figure out, oh my goodness, please God, let someone be there that I know. But of course, there really wasn't. So then you walk up to a group, nobody acknowledges you, so you still feel pretty much out by yourself. Well, fast forward not very long after, I was really known as a quite popular person in that my job was to dole out investment money to portfolio managers and jobs in a company that was, sorry, but quite prestigious in its time. So people kind of started to crowd around and they did talk with me. But my point here is I would always have my eye out for the old Elaine, the person walking around the room, having no one to talk to. And I would always go up and introduce myself and make a conversation. And frankly, I found not tons, but quite a few wonderful portfolio managers by so doing. So reach out to people. It really helps.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So last year, Elaine, you generously agreed to be interviewed in front of a live 100 Women audience. Imagine that, a live audience, right? For a fireside chat with fellow board member Jane Abatanta. And let me just pause to say to those who are listening that you can find a recording of that session in our 100 Women in Finance archives on our community site. So in that program, you mentioned a number of times that your career trajectory from a small publishing company to being a generalist doing all the things that traders don't want to do at Commodities Corp to becoming the president of More Capital was the result of your can-do attitude, your impulse towards curiosity, and being deliberate, as you've just mentioned, being deliberate about treating others decently. One might say that your path to the top wasn't intentional, but it makes sense in a rearview mirror. Your career course, though, seems a bit at odds with the advice that's often given to today's young professionals who are guided to be very planful and deliberate with their goals, building helpful career networks, finding mentors and sponsors, leveling up, you know, layering up credentials. Focusing on personal achievement, et cetera, et cetera. Can the Elaine Crocker approach still work today?
Interesting question. So first, let me say that I would be the last person to say that one shouldn't gather their credentials, build networks, find mentors if one can. But what I will also say is be very careful. Be careful of two things in your so gathering. One is don't worry about sunk costs. So, for instance, if you've studied to be a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, whatever it is, and you've put a few years in, then you've paid the money and you've built the network, but you find that it isn't quite what in fact you thought it might be. And I will also hasten to say, Lord knows there were many times along my way that I thought, oh my God, what am I doing here? But if you pushed forward a bit, it got exciting again. But there are those times for sure that it really is time perhaps to reinvent yourself a bit. So don't worry about those sunk costs, because whatever skills you've honed, whatever you've gathered, could be and will be very successful in a different environment. And you are going to do a whole lot better doing what you enjoy than doing what you determined to do kind of at the beginning or at the middle or whatever juncture you find yourself at your career. But I will also say that the building of networks is really quite helpful. And let me do a little commercial for 100 Women, if I could, at this particular juncture before getting back to can Elaine Crocker ride again in today's environment. These mentors, or more importantly, these networks are just so essential to one's career. And a lot of what 100 women are doing by providing these networks and now reaching into kind of very early stages of one's education, such as with high school students, is allowing them to understand all of the possibilities within the financial community. And so as you're attempting to understand what it is that you really want to do, join the organization, be a part of the organization, but most importantly, use those networks because they really are essential. I'm often asked, how do you find great people? Or how did you? Or how will you? And what I will tell you is it's their passion. That's what the important thing is. So when I get back to how I started, yes, it might seem like it was unusual. I think in my early days, going to school in Japan, being part of a different culture, I think that was net helpful in many ways of understanding perhaps different ways of looking at problems. But also, even though I was not quite 20 years, and now I'm entering my 26th year with Lewis and Moore Capital, I will say that I was able to reinvent myself. And specifically to your question, do I think people are going to have two jobs in 4+ decades? I think that's going to be pretty rare. I think, and again, I have no crystal ball, but I will say that perhaps people will change jobs and even careers every 3 to 5 years. Don't quote me on that. It's just a guesstimate. But that's what happened with me as well. Because even though I was with one company, as many people know, I started in a very entry-level area. And I also went from some by raising my hand, some by actually being noticed, but I went from entry level to perhaps research assistant to corporate development to human relations to heading up trader development to managing the whole enchilada. And it might say, oh, gee, that was a fast rise up. Let me tell you, there were a lot of bumps along the way, a lot of, oh, my goodness, where am I along the way? But what I'll say is if you love what you're doing, it isn't work. And people will often say, I'll ask friends 20 years younger than me who started in the financial community. And I'll say, well, what made you change? And often you'll hear the dues just weren't worth the reward. Or I really wanted more flexibility. But frankly, we can give it perhaps bigger rewards in the beginning, if that's really what it's all about, more flexibility. But I think what we can really give, and what I had, is the ability to invent yourself to do what you really enjoy doing. And while I'll say a lot of it is good luck, I will also say that everybody has an opportunity themselves to have a career, if in fact they want a career like mine, because in the interview area, when one's interviewing for a job, obviously you want to put your best attributes forward, but also you should be doing some interviewing yourself because, and these days, very often you're not just interviewing with one person, but a whole group of people. And you get to see the culture of a firm because it matters. It matters for you to understand the kind of environment where you work best, and the kind of environment where you're interviewing. And if, in fact, you find yourself, environments change, you change, that you're not in an environment that can help you succeed, well, then it's either a bump in the road and you have to push through it, or maybe it really is time for a real detour.
So, you know, it's interesting. I often say to young women who ask me, you know, what was your career plan and how did you go about building a career? And And I'll say to them, you know, I've actually worked in 7 different industries. And as much as I am a planner of many things in my life, my career was not something I planned. And I take a quote that I heard on an online course, a fintech online course, which I love, which is that what we need is to learn how to use a compass rather than a map. And I love that analogy because, you know, I think as women in particular, very often we feel like we have to know where we're going next in order to make that move. But that notion of having a compass and actually being comfortable on the journey of your career, on the journey of your life, I think is a really interesting one. And I use that quite a lot. And it seems to me that you've been on that path, that while you're very deliberate and focused on various things, you've built skills that have enabled you to be adaptable. And I think as we move forward in this world, that is one of the critical skills that I think we need to encourage, you know, our members and those in the industry to really adopt.
That is so intuitive. Actually, wonderful words there.
Yeah, so you know, your career very much, I can understand, you know, kind of how you got to where you are and all of the different things you do. So, you know, we know that you're known in the industry and very much respected as a team builder and a talent developer. You mentioned the conferences. Well, I can tell you in the environments that I've been in with you, you know, it's clear that you've earned huge respect from particularly senior men in the industry who are always crowded around you at events. It's quite funny to see. You know, you've obviously received a lot of industry awards over the years. And in 2008, American Banker recognized you as one of the most powerful women in banking. And in their write-up, you were quoted as saying, "I'm continually prodding people to get strong number twos. Strong people are harder to manage than malleable people, but strong people allow us to grow. And I don't want to look outside for every opportunity." I'd like to kind of peel back on this quote a bit. You are addressing the needs of the hiring manager. Let's flip the perspective and talk about what does it take to be a really good number two? I suspect many of our members would describe their professional roles in this way. So what does it actually take to be a great number two?
Another very interesting question. But I expect no less from you, Amanda. I would say to be a good number two, and frankly, why not number one? We all want to be there, I'm sure, or most of us might. Learn to be a good team member. Understand team dynamics. You're going to be with people who are more ego-driven. I don't have to describe that. Those who are task-driven. But understand, to achieve a better solution, never a perfect one, I'm not really ever looking for perfection, it really does take different skills. Learn to listen. Learn to have your ideas accepted by others. And understand that if your ideas are accepted by others, it's going to be noticed, and perhaps you won't get the full credit. That was my idea, I did it, it's me, me, me. But if you're going to be a really good team member, you're going to give the people who want to stay in their own lane, who may in fact be task-driven, but absolutely have wonderful skills in a particular area that you may not have, and can make the solution a whole lot better. You'll find as you go on that it is so much easier for the group and therefore the company to accept a goal rather than to make them do it, drag them along. So you're more like Sisyphus, pushing that rock up that hill over and over and over again. And frankly, I do think that when you become a really good team member, and you start to see the actually the dynamics of the team, but the qualities of the team, and you are able to take maybe the edges out of the my way or the highway type, which, by the way, they also could have and will have very good skills, but a little bit rougher to be a team member with. But when you learn how to navigate all of those people, and when you really understand that the more you know about something, the less you truly know, you're going to understand team dynamics, and pretty soon you're going to be tapped for number two, and I bet you'll be tapped for number one as well. You know, Lewis and I often say, we really have no power. You know, that's probably not completely factual, but you can lead people to solutions so much more easily if they feel that their opinions have been asked and they're part of the solution. If it's by edict, oh my goodness, it takes so much longer. And when you get to be my age, time matters. It absolutely matters. You can't have analysis paralysis. You can't have people constantly hopping off that train to derail you as well. You've got to find a way to move forward. And I think team dynamics helped you get there.
So, you know, you said, you know, for some of our members who are, you know, maybe in that number two spot, and some of them will aspire to potentially be number one. I'm not sure that I particularly like the number one, number two, because it makes it sound like, you know, you're inferior in some way. But, you know what I mean. So I guess my question is, did you ever want Lewis's job?
God, Lord, no. And the wonderful thing, 26 years after, he doesn't want mine either.
but if you are
staying in our own lanes, that's for sure. There's nothing wrong with staying in your own lanes. You know, I'm someone that builds culture, that gets people, I hope, to work together. And I very much like creating an environment for people to succeed. In all of my interviews, I ask one particular question, you know, because I think it's important for people to know themselves as much as they can at any one particular time. We change, so getting to know ourselves is a journey, as we know. But I always ask, can you describe an environment and what elements of that environment are necessary for you to be successful? And the reason I ask that question is, yes, I'd like to hear what they say for sure, but I also would like to know, do I have the ability to create that environment for the person? Because it has to be a match. It is very difficult to succeed if you're constantly fighting against the people and the environment you're in. So I think that's a very important part of this equation.
So I'm going to just ask one more question as we kind of close out here. You know, I've heard you say in a number of environments, you know, don't strive to be perfect. Instead, aim for excellence. How might adopting this mindset attract more women into careers in investing, do you think?
Part of it is almost risk management in some respects. What I will say, yeah, this is a difficult, it's an interesting question and a difficult question. If in fact you want to be perfect, it means you're not going to make mistakes. Isn't that really what perfect is all about?
Yeah.
And nobody wants to do that, because if you're going to be perfect, I mean, a top athlete at his, her prime, they're not going to have every game won, every day be the perfect day. Absolutely not, nor are we. And so if you strive for something that frankly, it's good to be excellent, but if you're striving to never make mistakes, and I've managed people who very much are paralyzed by they just can't make mistakes. I have had portfolio managers whose hit ratio, meaning they have 70 to 80% winning trades. I mean, that's unheard of. However, the bet is so teeny tiny, they don't make much money. They're just striving to be perfect, but they don't have the risk management skills to manage that, if you will. So I think that's a piece of what I mean, but it also means, you know, it sounds like, oh, gee, I was really very lucky in my career. And I was, make no mistake. I did ad hoc kind of get into one of the most marvelous places one could, but I stayed there. And I stayed there through rough times, through losing time, through difficult personal times, whatever, but I got through. And what gets you through this is frankly a level of flexibility, but also a network. You know, when you're starting out, you're not going to have a team. You are a team, you know, or a support person. But, and again, it's a great thing 100 Women does. I built my network. In fact, the advice when I didn't give Lewis a job in the 80s, way back when, was build your network, Lewis, which he will never let me forget that I told him. But it's important to build a network. It's important to take a chance. It's important to learn how other people do things and to actually build a trust relationship so they'll actually tell you. I think that is possibly the one thing that has made me whatever I am, and that is I build trust relationships. I'm direct, maybe sometimes a little too direct, I hope not, but I'm sure I am. But people trust me. And when people trust you, they tell you more of the story, so you don't have to prod it out of them, because they're willing to share. And as we're embarking on our careers, take some chances. Don't worry about being the best of the best. I mean, there's always going to be, as I will tell you, someone younger, someone smarter, someone whatever-er. But take a chance. And perfection to me means you're not really taking much of a chance.
Great. Well, thank you, Elaine. I think we'll finish on that note. It's been wonderful talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you at our next board meeting.
I think it's a Zoomer, Amanda, but I look forward to seeing you when the time
I'll see you
comes.
Online. Thanks so much, Elaine.
Thank you for the opportunity. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Remember to follow 100 Women in Finance on our LinkedIn page. You can also enjoy our past programs and connect with other members in the private section of our website, Community.